go spread the word. When you get a fresh, hot McCrispy from McDonald's and you can feel the heat coming through the bag, don't try to wait till you get home. Always respect hot chicken. The McCrispy, only at McDonald's. Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.
Some people like to deep clean every Saturday morning. I prefer to spend a few minutes every day keeping things fresh with Lysol. Lysol's brand new day disinfecting wipes conveniently tackle surfaces, including remotes, tablets, and smartphones, killing 99.9% of viruses and bacteria with a fragrance that feels like a tropical getaway for your senses. Don't just clean, Lysol clean.
Earning your degree online doesn't mean you have to go about it alone. At Capella University, we're here to support you when you're ready. From enrollment counselors who get to know you and your goals, to academic coaches who can help you form a plan to stay on track, we care about your success and are dedicated to helping you pursue your goals. Going back to school is a big step, but having support at every step of your academic journey can make a big difference. Imagine your future differently at capella.edu.
Whether you're a morning person or a bedtime procrastinator, everyone deserves a mattress that works for their style. And you'll find the best mattress for you at Ashley. The new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley brings you one-of-a-kind body-conforming technology, making every sleep tailored to be your best. The collection also features cool-to-the-touch covers and motion absorption to help minimize sleep disruptions from partners, pets, or kids. Shop the all-new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.
You've been listening to our podcast, Getting Educated, Regulating Your Emotional Reactions, and it's been really helpful. Yet you know you could do better, be better, and you're wanting and needing more support. That's where our coaching service is a game changer. We're here for you when you need us the most, ensuring you have all the tools and resources at your fingertips, guiding and supporting you to be more effective. Our free rapid relief call helps you gain a broader perspective, commit to your best next steps, and determine what coaching support is right for you. Visit rapidreliefcall.com to book your call today. Welcome to the Journey Beyond Divorce podcast, where we invite you into a journey of healing and personal transformation that will radically change your divorce experience, heal your heart while refining your character, and set you up to be effective and feel empowered as you navigate the practical and emotional challenges of divorce. I'm your host, Karen McMahon, founder of Journey Beyond Divorce. My divorce brought me to my knees, and it also transformed me and set me on this path to help you.
Children exposed to a high conflict divorce, they are going to experience constant activation of their stress response system. And it's particularly harmful during these sensitive periods of brain development and body growth. And as I said, their little brains and their bodies, they start to change from all this persistent fear and anxiety. And the stress, it hurts them immediately and long term. So immediately, it's going to hurt them in their ability to learn, to regulate their emotions, to engage with their peers. And ultimately, it's going to lead to lifelong physical and psychological consequences.
Stepping into the realm of high conflict divorce can be daunting after years in a dysfunctional marriage that's left you feeling diminished and uncertain. In our High Conflict Divorce Demystified series, we acknowledge the emotional roller coaster you're on, facing self-doubt and fear, especially regarding your children and finances. We're here to provide empathy, education, and guidance as you navigate the maze of legal intricacies and emotional challenges ahead. So let's dive in. Welcome back to another episode of High Conflict Divorce Demystified. Today, we're talking about child advocacy, the guardian ad litem journey with your kids. And with me today is attorney L. Barr. So in the turbulent seas of high conflict custody battles and family disputes, a guardian ad litem, Gail, as I'll refer to it, is an attorney for the child and serves as a lighthouse, guiding decisions in the best interest of the children involved. It's crucial to understand when a Gail is needed, what their role is, and the limit and extent of their relationship with the parents. This podcast delves into the circumstances that necessitate the involvement of a Gail, unraveling their purpose and shedding light on their pivotal role. We explore the situations that trigger the appointment of a Gail, their objectives, and the critical role that they play in steering the court decisions toward the welfare and best interest of your children. Engaging with a guardian ad litem can be a perplexing maze for both the parents and the children. And as we navigate this complex path, our podcast aims to empower you with the knowledge and tools necessary to support your children compassionately and effectively through this process. We'll explore strategies for fostering open communication and maintaining a stable and supportive environment and preparing your children for interactions with the Gail. And by demystifying the Gail's role and functions, we aim to provide parents with actionable insights to facilitate a smoother experience for their children, ensuring that their voices are heard and that their well-being is prioritized throughout the legal process. With me today, as I said, is L. Barr. She's an experienced family law attorney with a deep commitment to serving children and families. L has experience representing clients in all family law matters with an emphasis on serving as a court-appointed guardian ad litem. She's also an ambassador to Our Family Wizard, which is an online shared parenting platform that is especially designed for high conflict situations. So with no further ado, welcome, Elle.
Thank you for the very kind intro. I'm thrilled to be here.
Yeah, there's so much confusion around the role of an attorney for the children, a Gail, a guardian ad litem, and especially like what the boundaries are with the parents and if there's different age children, how it works. And so I think a great place to start is, first of all, I'm so curious how you got into this particular angle of law. So let's just start there.
Absolutely. I decided that I wanted to go into family law during my second year of law school. So I had changed my mind a few times during my first year of law school. And then during my second year, I took a family law course. And then I also participated in two pro bono clinics. I participated in the domestic violence pro bono clinic and the child advocacy clinic. And there was just something really, really special about family law. I was drawn to it. I loved my family law class. Just felt right. Felt like home. So after law school, I clerked for a family division judge, and then I worked in the public sector for a bit. And finally, I made my way to Office of Law Guardian, where I started representing children in dependency matters. So those are cases where there's abuse and neglect, and a court-appointed attorney represents those children who were abused and neglected. And then from there, I got into divorce and separation and being appointed to children who were impacted by high conflict divorce situations. So that's how I became a GAL. And that's a little bit about my background. It's a really humbling role. And I love serving as a GAL. At the same time, I also love working for Our Family Wizard.
So let's start at the beginning, because the first thing I'm hearing is the word appointed. Is it true that the only way that one hires a GAL is if they're appointed, or can a family choose that they need one? And does that vary from jurisdiction to jurisdiction?
A GAL is court appointed. So in each state, there's statutes, there's case law that will outline and define the role of the GAL, the appointment of the GAL. So GALs are not hired. Parents don't go out, call up the attorney, ask if they could retain you as the GAL. That's not how it works. So I'll just, start with first guardian ad litem, GAL. So litem, it's a Latin word. Litem means lawsuit. So guardian ad is for litem, the lawsuit. So a guardian ad litem is either requested by the parties in court. So the attorneys for the parents can petition and request that a GAL be appointed, or sua sponte, meaning the judge on his or her own will appoint a guardian ad litem to the case when there are significant disagreements between the parents as to what is in the best interest of the child or the children. So essentially, the guardian ad litem is this trusted third party outside opinion, and the guardian ad litem serves as the eyes and the ears of the court.
So I think this eluded me in the past. So even if both parties want a guardian ad litem, the judge is still the one who appoints a particular individual.
Correct. In my county, for example, there's a roster. So the attorneys can take the roster and the attorneys together, or if the parents are pro se, they could look at the roster and they could pull the attorney and make the request to the court. Gotcha. But guardian ad litems, we are court appointed attorneys. We're not privately retained. I know parents have reached out to me asking, can I retain you? Can I do a consultation? And I'll say to them, you know, I appreciate the call. Thank you so much. Or thank you for your email. I am court appointed. I serve the court. I am an arm of the court. If the judge feels it's appropriate for your case to have a guardian ad litem, perhaps I could be appointed through the court. But there's no privately retained guardian ad litems.
Okay, so that's the first thing for all of us to understand. And let's talk about what are the types of circumstances that would have the judge appoint a guardian ad litem?
There are a lot of circumstances that would raise red flags and have the judge then on their own appoint a guardian ad litem. The first is when there's, as I said, significant disagreements and conflict, when there's a high conflict case, and let's say there's substance abuse, mental health issues, domestic violence, the judge right away is going to say, this case needs a guardian ad litem. Most often we work hand in hand when there's a guardian ad litem appointed. Oftentimes there's an order requiring that the parties submit and complete forensic evaluations. So the judge is going to use the guardian ad litem's report and recommendations alongside with the mental health professional's recommendation. And that allows the court to make that best interest determination with respect to the children and with respect to custody and visitation.
And can you just tell our listeners what a custody evaluation is in a nutshell?
Sure. A custody evaluation, it's a court-ordered evaluation where the parties go and meet with a mental health professional. Generally, they have a roster as well, and the judge chooses which mental health professional is going to conduct the evaluation. They dig into the circumstances of the matter. They meet with the parties, the children, and then they give a recommendation based on all of their testing, their assessments, their observations as to what is best for the children, what custody arrangement would be best.
So is it typical for the guardian ad litem and the forensic to have a close working relationship?
Very close. My recommendations, oftentimes I will wait until I have that forensic evaluation because I'm going to include that when I'm doing my investigative work, and I draft very thorough and comprehensive reports with recommendations to the court. And if there is a forensic eval going on at the same time that I'm doing my investigative work, I am going to hold, I'm going to hit pause on submitting my report and recommendations until I review that report thoroughly. I see the results of the testing, the assessments, the observations, and then I will include all of that in my report that I've relied upon that in addition to the investigative work that I've conducted, because my work goes beyond the parents. I talk to teachers, relatives, I talk to neighbors, I talk to if they each have a treating therapist, if the child has a therapist, if they have a family therapist. I talk to everyone and anyone under the sun who is connected and related to this family who could give me information about the child and their relationship with each parent.
Elle, could you share one or two stories with us. I mean, you could be, as we were talking offline, I would imagine you could be representing children who can't even articulate for themselves because they're so young what's best. And you could be representing a 12-year-old who wants what they want. And that's just the kid angle, right? Like, then there's the hundreds of different scenarios between the parents. Is there one or two that you could share, short stories you could share that would give a flavor to our listeners?
Sure, without mentioning any confidential information, names, or locations, I'm happy to share some stories just to highlight what it's like representing children of different ages and the issues, the facts and circumstances that I dig into. And I've been doing this for a very long time. I've been practicing law for 20 years, and I have had, when I was at Office of Law Guardian, I represented thousands of children, abused and neglected children. And over the years, I've represented hundreds of children in high conflict divorce cases. And I've seen it all from, a few months old until 18 years old. And emotions are really, really high in family court, and judges are making decisions about what is most important to parents, their children, and their money. And these decisions are complex and multifaceted. So just to share one or two stories, I represented a teenage girl. This was during the pandemic. It was really, really difficult to conduct the interviews because no one was going out. No one wanted to meet with me. I couldn't go to the houses to see her. The family had been in litigation since 2006. So that's when the litigation started. And I didn't get appointed until 2020. So, fast forward. Or, 14 years. She's a 16-year-old girl, and I'm coming in because a petition for modification was filed with respect to custody. And the judge wanted to know, does this teenager have a well-reasoned preference? And if she does, what is that preference? What's going on in her relationship with mom? What's going on at school? What's going on with dad, with stepmom, with grandparents? So I got pulled in. I will tell you, this is one of the most challenging cases I've had because the pandemic had just started and I didn't know how am I going to investigate? How am I going to look into the facts and the circumstances and all the issues that are relevant to this matter? No one will let me into their home. No one will talk to me. But I was able to conduct everything through Zoom with the parents. And I generally, when I meet with the children, I'll meet with them at mom's house, at dad's house. If it's a same-sex couple, I'll meet with them at, dad A's house, dad B's house. And I see them in their environment. So I did that during the pandemic. I did the same thing over Zoom. I met with her when she was at mom's house. I met with her when she was at dad's house. I met with the teachers. I met with, well, there were a few different teachers that I met with. I met with the school guidance counselor. She had a health issue. So I had to talk to the pediatrician. There was an issue with her weight. There were concerns about possibly an eating disorder. I talked to her mental health pro who was working one-on-one with her. And then we set up another therapist who was working on rebuilding and repairing the relationship with, I don't want to say which parent because I don't want to reveal too much information, but there was a break in the relationship. So I connected with that therapist. And in the end, after pulling all of this information, all the facts, and really taking into consideration this teenage girl's, her emotional, her physical well-being, the family dynamics, her educational needs, her medical and health needs. We didn't have a forensic evaluator. She's a 16-year-old girl. This case had been in litigation on and off since 2006. I drafted my report. I'm not kidding you. It was a 400, I think it was a 408-page report, if I remember correctly. It was very comprehensive. And the majority of it was maybe 36 pages was the report with the recommendation, and the rest were exhibits that were attached, including all the R family wizard communications over the past 14 years were attached as an exhibit. And the report, it really truly outlined what would be or what is in the best interest of this child. And it provided recommendations with respect to custody and visitation. The court essentially rubber stamped that report and those recommendations. She's now 18 years old. I'm still in touch with her. I'm in touch with the majority of my clients, the ones that I work with, like on this type of level where it's a day to day for a year or 2 years. And she's doing really, really well. She has repaired, she has rebuilt her relationship with the parent where it was broken and strained. And she's still with the parent, living full time with the other parent who had filed that petition for modification. And she's doing really, really well. And that showed, like, that's just an example of when a guardian ad litem comes in and they investigate what is actually really happening and drafts that report, the parents read it. They see what their child wants. They see what all the issues are. It gives them some self-awareness. And ultimately, at the end, what happens, not every case, but this case, the parents settled. They didn't even go before the judge, but the judge essentially, they put all my recommendations in, and that's what got rubber stamped, the consent order, the exact recommendations with respect to physical and legal custody, and then all the services that were recommended for the child and the family.
Wow, that's an amazing story. I have a client who just wrapped up after 8 or 9 years, but this girl, since she was 2 years old, her parents were that. It's just heartbreaking. And yet, what a powerful example of what a guardian ad litem can do to help smooth things. Can you give us an example of maybe a rather young child?
Yeah, I've been appointed for little ones when it's a very high conflict situation. So with little ones, they don't really have a well-reasoned preference. Under the age of 7, 8, it's really hard to put a thorough, like, backed up position for the child. And a lot of times the children, they don't even know what's going on. They don't understand the situation. So for the little ones, I'm substituting judgment. I'm putting, what's in the best interest based on my investigative work, based on the situation, if there's been domestic violence, if there's alcohol abuse, if there's mental health issues. And then I'm also going through our best interest statute. So this is something that's really important. Every single state has a best interest statute, and that statute is going to outline factors that need to be considered when a best interest determination is made with respect to custody. So in Pennsylvania, where I practice, our best interest statute has 16 factors. So I'm going through those 16 factors when I draft my report, and I'm keeping them in the back of my mind as I'm doing my investigative work. So, for example, one of those 16 factors is which parent is, or which party is more likely to encourage and permit frequent and continuing contact between the child and the other party. So it's essentially asking who's the more cooperative parent, who's more flexible. Another factor is the presence of past abuse committed by a parent or party. So has there been physical abuse, emotional abuse? They want to take that into consideration. They take into consideration extended family, child's sibling relationships. Does one of the parents have a child from another, from a former relationship? How connected is that child to the step sibling? And then, one of the very important factors in Pennsylvania is which party is more likely to maintain a loving, stable, consistent, and nurturing relationship with the child to meet the child's needs? And that's all of the needs, emotional, physical, and mental needs. So that one's really, really important. It goes on and on again. So we have those 16 factors. So those are all things that I'm considering when I'm drafting my report, when I'm making my recommendation. And that's what the judge is going to rely upon when making a determination and entering an order.
And I know that the younger the child, the more heartbroken the parent when they think that they're not going to have time with them. And so, can we pivot to a little bit more about what is your relationship and interaction with the parents?
My interactions and relationship with the parents, I'm team family, I'm team child. So my relationship with the parents is essentially to schedule interviews, to learn about their situation, to understand their positions, and to set up meetings with the child and with any other family member, friend, or third party that they think is important for me to connect with. So I have no responsibility to the parents. My role and my responsibility is to the child and to report back to the court. So parents often think, oh, here's this girl here. Oh, I'm going to win her over. But that's really not how it works. I'm there to gather facts. and information. I mean, I really appreciate it when a parent has all the medical records right there, has all the educational records and turns it right over to me so I don't have to go do my digging for hours and hours and request collaterals. That's very, very helpful. But the relationship between the guardian ad litem and the parent, there is no attorney-client privilege. There is no relationship. And I put that in my introduction letter. I write to the parents just to let them know that there is no attorney-client privilege. I will be copying their attorney on every email correspondence. I want there to be full transparency. Anything they say to me is not a secret. It is not confidential. That will be included in my report with my recommendations. So it's really, really important for parents to keep that in mind.
And the other thing I heard you say, just in case it slipped past our listeners, is you're here to collect facts, not opinions.
Exactly.
And that's a big difference, right?
Yeah. And parents can share anything they want. I don't limit them in what they say. I keep it casual and I make it a conversation because I want to hear their position and their understanding of the situation and their perspective. But essentially, I'm looking for the facts. You know, if dad feels this way or mom thinks this, those aren't facts. Feelings are not factual information. They don't tell me what grade the child's in, what school he or she goes to, what are the medical issue, what are the concerns, and they're not going to help me go through those 16 factors. Yeah, if there's been drug or alcohol abuse, tell me about that. Has someone been inpatient? What kind of treatment did they receive? When were they discharged? What were the discharge instructions? But telling me, oh, this one's a drunk and this one just drinks all day and I always see this one with alcohol here, those aren't facts. You know, give me the facts. Is there a problem with alcohol? Are you using SoberLink? Was that court ordered? Tell me about it. Put me in the know.
So I think that's very helpful. I think our listeners need to understand the earlier conversation about the relationship between the evaluator and the guardian ad litem and the relationship between them and the guardian ad litem. I'd love to talk a little bit about what you've noticed in terms of the stress and burden that your clients, the children, have experienced when their parents are going through years of a high conflict divorce.
It is a tremendous toxic stress that these children feel when their parents are going through a high conflict divorce. That is considered an ACE, an adverse childhood experience. And for your listeners who aren't familiar with the study, back in the 90s, the CDC and Kaiser, they conducted an important public health research study, and they took a deep dive into exposure to trauma during childhood and how that impacts adults, how their exposure during childhood affects them later in life. And so there's 10 ACEs, there's abuse, neglect, and household challenges. Those are the three broad categories. And under abuse, there's physical, emotional, sexual. Under neglect, there's physical, emotional. And under household dysfunction or challenges, there's mental illness, incarceration of a parent, witnessing domestic violence, substance abuse by a parent, and then finally, parental separation or divorce. And so divorce or parental separation, it's not per se an adverse childhood experience. What is the trauma is the unmanaged conflict and the inability of the parents to identify, address, and meet the needs of their children. That's what becomes the adverse childhood experience. And that becomes this toxic stress on children. It impacts their brains, their bodies. It actually makes their brains and bodies change. People don't realize this. So what ends up happening is their prefrontal cortex, their pleasure reward center, and their fear response center are all impacted by a high conflict divorce. It's mind-boggling. So I would encourage all of your listeners to pull that study, to read it, to link it in the show notes, because children exposed to a high conflict divorce, they are going to experience constant activation of their stress response system. And it's particularly harmful during these sensitive periods of brain development and body growth. And as I said, their little brains and their bodies, they start to change from all this persistent fear and anxiety. And the stress, it hurts them immediately and long term. So immediately, it's going to hurt them in their ability to learn, to regulate their emotions, to engage with their peers. And ultimately, it's going to lead to lifelong physical and psychological consequences.
What is the name of the study again?
It's called the ACEs study. And ACEs is an acronym for Adverse Childhood Experiences.
Wow. I will definitely have that linked in the show notes for you folks. And I didn't know about that. That is well worth investing some time and understanding. There are so many things we can do. And what we do at Journey Beyond is try to help our clients learn emotional regulation and better communication skills, all to tamp down what's been going on during the marriage. And so I really appreciate you bringing up that point. So can we just talk about some do's and don'ts? So you've got the ear of at least one of the parents as you're speaking, and let's assume that their situation is going to call for a guardian ad litem and more likely than not custody evaluation. What would be your high level do's and don'ts for the parents listening?
You've heard the saying, April showers bring May flowers. If co-parenting has been difficult this year due to your ex's alcohol abuse, you need SoberLink. How it works is simple. Your co-parent will test at scheduled times. Built-in facial recognition will confirm their identity. Tampa sensors will flag any attempts to cheat. And results will get sent instantly to your phone, so you know that your kids are with a sober parent. Lay the groundwork for brighter days ahead. Visit soberlink.com/JBD to learn more and get $50 off your device.
Well, do's, I'd love to start there because the do's are really easy, really, really easy. If you want to truly put your child first, if you want to prioritize and protect the needs and welfare of your child, what you need to do is you need to provide your child with safety, consistency, and stability. Those are really simple things: safety, consistency, and stability. So with safety, you know, let your child know you are safe. That's all you have to do. Tell your child you are safe. I am here for you. Let them hear you say those words directly from you, that you are going to protect them and you're going to make sure nothing bad happens to them. With consistency, same thing. It is so simple. Provide your child with routines. Kids love feeling in control and knowing what to expect. So stick to that bedtime, the bedtime that they had pre-separation. If it was 8 o'clock, if it was 8:30, if they're getting a little older now, you could say, you know what? We're going to bump your bedtime up to 9 o'clock tonight. If you always eat breakfast together, dinner together, do that. Routines provide that rhythm. They let kids know that there are things that they can count on. They could rely on that. So you got your safety, your consistency, and then finally, stability. Create this nurturing and supportive environment. So we all know that. And how do you do that? What's that going to look like? You know, you create a home life that's judgment-free. You tell your kids, you can tell me anything you want. There is no judgment here. I love you. I support you no matter what. You be available for them. You listen to them and not just listen, you know, in the background as you're cooking or as you're checking your emails or responding to text messages. Put your phone down, stop what you're doing, sit down at the table, make eye contact, listen with your child, hear what they have to say, ask follow-up questions, and encourage them to share their feelings, whether they're positive or negative. You know, you want to talk about those thoughts and feelings and what's happening and what they want to see. And I mean, validate those feelings as well. It's just as important as listening and hearing them out is validating them and accepting those feelings. Even if you don't agree with them and it's contrary to what you want and what you thought would happen, validate them. Say, I hear you. I understand you. Thank you for sharing that with me. And then finally, if you feel like your child needs more support, seek out the very best trauma-informed therapists and providers. And doing all of those things, it's going to prioritize your children. It's really going to put them front and center.
Love that. Love
that. So those are the do's. Yeah.
Okay. Safety, consistency, stability. And what are a couple of your key don'ts?
These are so obvious. And when you're in the process of a divorce or separation, I don't think parents really realize this, but don't ever use your child as a messenger. Mm-hmm. If you have something to say to your co-parent, get on your phone, send a text message. If you're using Our Family Wizard, which is a co-parenting app that helps you draft your message with the use of artificial intelligence, we have a tone meter that will help you, that will alert you to your tone. And if you're using any emotionally charged words, it's going to assist you in communicating effectively and positively. Get on there. Don't ever, ever put your kids in the middle. That's the number one don't. And then don't dump on your kids. They're not your therapist. They're not your friend. Don't start going on and on about your co-parent, your life, your financial struggles. That's a big, big no-no. All that's going to do, it's going to terrify your child. It's going to make them so scared for how life is going to change and what's going to happen to my family. Where am I going to live? What's going to happen to the dog, school, friends, activities? Kids just need to know that they are safe. Again, going back to the safety, you are going to be okay. You are going to be supported and loved. And if you could focus on the do's, that's way, way more important. But it's also, you know, just knowing those don'ts also. I'm trying to think of some other don'ts because there's a lot of them. I know the messenger, dumping on your kids. If I think of more, I will share them as they come to mind.
And I would imagine, I think I actually heard a custody evaluator say this, whatever you do, don't coach your kids before they get on the phone with a professional like you.
Yes, that's a big do not. Don't coach your kids before they meet with the GAL. If they go in for an in-camera review with the judge, they cannot be coached. We know from the terminology that they're using, from the way they're trying to recall what was said to them and being so careful with sharing their thoughts and feelings, we know if a child has been coached. I just thought of another don't. And don't ever ask your kids or drill them about their conversations, about their telephone calls, about their time with your co-parent. That's not appropriate. It's going to make them feel on edge. It's going to be the reason why divorce or separation is an adverse childhood experience, because it's going to put them into fight or flight, and it's going to make them have that feeling like seeing a bear in the woods. That's how I describe it to parents. I say, when you do these things to your children, it's like they're seeing a bear in the woods. Their heart is pounding. Their blood is rushing. Their pupils are dilated. They are sweating and they are scared. And when you do this over and over and over again, that's what causes the change in their bodies and in their brains. So I hope parents take this very seriously, because the actions that they take during their divorce or separation deeply affect their children immediately and long-term.
You know, it's so interesting. I'd like to tell you a little story. So often parents, especially if they feel like the other parent has a short fuse, they really do want to know, like, are you safe over there? And I think your point is such a good one. I had come up with a game. I always tried to turn things into a game. My kids were like 6 and 8 when we first started our divorce. And I did this all the time, not just when they were at dad's. And so we would sit around the dinner table and we do highlights, lowlights. It was, what was the highlight of your day? What was the lowlight of your day? And it gave them a chance to really, they started really enjoying it. And that way, if they came back from dad's, it was the same thing. And sometimes I would find out, you know, I kind of sat and watched TV all weekend and I felt lonely. And so I actually was able to support them without drilling them. And I'm just curious what your thought on a strategy like that is.
You know, I think open-ended questions are innocuous, and children are going to share with you what they want to share. And if you're providing them with that safety, consistency, and stability, They're not going to be afraid to tell the truth and share. But if you're drill, it's different. It's different asking like a very open-ended question versus saying, well, tell me what happened, at 3 p.m. on Saturday when you were at the rec center with so and so, and this, it's a very, very different situation. So I think as a GAL, as a professional who works with children, I think open-ended questions are absolutely fine. And when the children want to share, they're going to share.
And I agree with you. I think that the most important thing is that you are a safe person, because if the child does have difficulties with the other parent or anybody else, if you're quick to bash or judge or jump in, then they're not going to tell you. And then who do they go to? So I love that safety piece. What haven't we covered that you would really like to share with our listeners before we wrap up? That's important.
I do like to talk about the three C's sometimes. It's something that's easy to remember. It's the three C's of co-parenting. It's communicate, cooperate, and compromise. And it's just as easy as providing your kids with safety, consistency, and stability. Provide your co-parent with effective communication, cooperation, and that flexibility, the ability to compromise. So I really, really like sharing that with parents because it's something they remember. They're like, oh, the three C's of co-parenting. And they just get it. And then I also like when I go out and I meet with parents, I usually give them a folder. Well, post-pandemic, during the pandemic, I would email the resources to them. But post-pandemic, I would provide, well, now pre-pandemic and post-pandemic, I provide a folder. And in that folder, I include Dr. Emery's. He's a professor of psychology. He drafted the Children's Bill of Rights in divorce. And I give parents that Bill of Rights and I read it with them. And I go over it and I say, right? Children have the right not to be asked to choose sides. They have the right to not be told bad things about the other parent. They have the right to not be asked to be a messenger. They have the right to not be asked by one parent to tell the other parent untruths. It goes on and on. And then finally, they have the right to be a kid. So this is something really, really powerful that I like to share. So the three C's, the Child Placement Bill of Rights, and I'm trying to think if there's any other resources. A lot of times I'll share the TED Talk by Dr. Nadine Burke-Harris.
Oh, that's a different one than I thought you were going to say someone else. What is it, Dr. Nadine?
Dr. Nadine Burke-Harris, she is the former Surgeon General of California, and she has a TED Talk on ACEs. And she goes through all of the research that was conducted back in the late 90s. She goes into the science behind it. And it is phenomenal. It's maybe 16 or 17 minutes, but it is worth the time to watch it. She references some really well-known, highly regarded medical professionals who've participated in the study. She quotes Dr. Block. He was the former president of the American Academy of Pediatrics. He is the one who opined that ACEs, I want to find the exact quote for you. I have it. It is so powerful. And I share this with parents too. When I tell them to watch the TED Talk, I said, wait till she announces or she shares the quote from Dr. Block because it's going to make the hairs on your arms stand up. So Dr. Robert Block, he opined that ACEs is the single greatest unaddressed public health concern facing our nation. So every single parent going through a divorce or separation, they need to be aware of this study. They need to see themselves, have self-awareness of the impact that their actions and their words have on their children.
Well, that's just a mic drop right there, Elle. I mean, I think we could wrap it up right there. Do you have that TED Talk and Dr. Emery's Bill of Rights? Do you have links that you can send to me that I could put in the show notes?
I do. I'll share them with you.
Okay, folks, you can look in the show notes now because we got them for you and they're in there. And I haven't heard of those two. And I've been interviewing a lot of people who do what you do. So that's great. I'm going to dive into the two of those right away. This has been so incredibly helpful. You are a doll. You have such passion and such a beautiful heart for children. And for our listeners, I just want to say my divorce was 3.5 years. My kids were barely in grade school. I was scared to death for them. I was a sloppy version of myself. I was scared for myself. It makes sense, whatever it is you're going through. I think that what Elle is saying and what I would say is, every day we wake up and we get to be the best version of ourselves. So keep looking in the mirror, keep noticing where you maybe slipped and didn't do well and try and do better, because these gorgeous little people that you've brought into the world, that they're priceless and they didn't sign up for this. And I don't want you to have shame or guilt or dread. Just keep trying to do the best you can. And I think with these resources, you've just gotten a lot here. So, Elle, thank you so much for coming on and sharing all of this with us.
Thank you for having me. I really appreciate this opportunity.
Yeah. And we'll be back again real soon with another episode of High Conflict Divorce Demystified. Until then, take care.
You've been listening to our podcast, Getting Educated, Regulating Your Emotional Reactions, and it's been really helpful. Yet you know you could do better, be better, and you're wanting and needing more support. That's where our coaching service is a game changer. We're here for you when you need us the most, ensuring you have all the tools and resources at your fingertips, guiding and supporting you to be more effective. Our free rapid relief call helps you gain a broader perspective, commit to your best next steps, and determine what coaching support is right for you. Visit rapidreliefcall.com to book your call today.
Thanks for joining us on the Journey Beyond Divorce podcast. I hope you found guidance and encouragement to help you along your journey. If you like my podcast, please take a minute to subscribe and leave a review on iTunes. You can also visit us at jbddivorcesupport.com, where our team of coaches support both men and women through our one-on-one coaching, group programs, online courses, and free resources. Stay tuned for our next episode, and I'll talk to you soon.
Go spread the word. When you get a fresh, hot McCrispy from McDonald's and you can feel the heat coming through the bag, don't try to wait till you get home. Always respect hot chicken. The McCrispy, only at McDonald's. Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.
Earning your degree online doesn't mean you have to go about it alone. At Capella University, we're here to support you when you're ready. From enrollment counselors who get to know you and your goals, to academic coaches who can help you form a plan to stay on track, we care about your success and are dedicated to helping you pursue your goals. Going back to school is a big step, but having support at every step of your academic journey can make a big difference. Imagine your future differently at capella.edu.
The living room is where you make life's most beautiful memories. But your sofa shouldn't be the one remembering them. The new life-resistant, high-performance furniture collection from Ashley is designed to withstand all the spills, slip-ups, and muddy paws that come with the best parts of life. Ashley high-performance sofas and recliners are soft, on-trend, and easy to clean. Shop the high-performance furniture in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.